call this meeting of the Lincoln County Board of Commissioners to order. It's Wednesday, August 29th. It's 9:30 a.m. and we are in the Commissioners Meeting Room in the Courthouse Room 108. First item on our agenda is to establish a quorum. We have two commissioners present. Commissioner Hall is in some leadership training activities, so we look forward to his return next week. Next item on our agenda is some well-deserved recognition. To me, it's a big celebration. County was a recipient of some good news, and I'll ask representatives from Health and Human Services to come forward and share the good news. I was looking for balloons.
We should have brought them.
This is great news.
Yes, we're really happy to be here. I'm Rebecca McBee Wilson, the Health Center Director.
And I'm Rebecca Austin, the Health Department Director.
And I'm Nicole Fields, and for this context, we'll say I was the Accreditation Coordinator.
So we have some late breaking news. But first, we're going to talk about the award that we received from HRSA, or the Department of Health and Human Services. HRSA is the Health Resources Service Administration, and they are the body that oversees our health center. And beginning in 2015, the HHS and HRSA began implementing quality awards for performance of health centers. And the purpose of that was to increase capacity for patients and modernize primary care and infrastructure, improve outcomes, and promote a quality-driven and innovative organizational structure. So since 2015, we've done pretty well in receiving awards to recognize our quality improvement. HRSA, about a decade ago, the healthcare really started changing in the United States. And they were recognizing that our outcomes weren't very good and that we really needed to focus on preventative health care. And so the model of patient-centered primary care homes, or patient medical homes, became really what was expected of us in the primary care world. And so HRSA really got behind this, and they really they had expected that health centers become recognized as patient-centered primary care homes. We have had that since 2012, and it is a lot in order to maintain status as a patient-centered medical home. You have to do a lot of coordination with the patient. It's a partnership with the patient, and you really work hard to make sure that their health is the best it can be. Really, the goal of healthcare now is to be well and stay well. So what you do is you reach out a lot to talk to your patients, get them in if they have chronic care illnesses, so that you can monitor that and help them work together to decide what's the best for that. So we've been doing that for quite a while now. And the HRSA has 16 different clinical metrics that they expect us to report on every year. Some of those are about chronic illnesses like diabetes. Some of them are about hypertension. Some are preventative measures in terms of colorectal cancer screens, well child exams, well women exams. And so every year we have to report to HRSA how we do on all these measures, plus a lot of other things. And that's how these quality awards come to us, is that they look at all of the United States, all of the 1,352 different health centers in the country, and compare the work that we do. And so this year, I'm really excited to say that we received $84,448 in quality and improvement awards. $35,000 of that was for maintaining our patient-centered medical home status. The others were for reporting out and using an electronic health record. HRSA learned quite a while ago that if you report all of your information out of reports that are in the electronic health record, that oftentimes people had lower numbers. So when they see that all of your numbers are reported out of the EHR and your numbers are high, they really want to recognize that. So they give you additional monies for doing that. So we receive some money for that as well. We also receive monies, and we've received this every year, for increasing 10% on some of our clinical metrics. So if you, they never tell you which ones they're gonna focus on, because they don't want you just focusing on those. They just select those after they see everybody's results. So we receive money for that as well.
Commissioner Thompson, do you have a question?
Yeah, related to this money, what tax strings are attached to it? I mean, it's got for a certain award, but where can you spend it?
We can spend it on anything that we see that would improve quality of our health center. So it's pretty big.
So it's got to stay inside the health care centers.
Yes. We can spend it on training. We can spend it on equipment. We can spend it on a variety of different things. And it only says the attachment to it is you have to be focusing on improving quality care. So in the past, we bought monitors for the clinics, is
my
some of the things.
Wayne, how do you handle this inside the budget, since we don't know what it's going to be spent on? You just put it in as a general line item under?
That's what we've done.
Yeah.
Okay. I just want to make sure.
You just got to go to the right fund. Yeah. It gets in the right fund.
In a large enough fund. That...
So we've always received those monies. But the really, really exciting thing that I want to share today is that we received a Health Center Quality Leader Award. Now, this doesn't go to everyone. In fact, in Oregon, out of all of the health centers in Oregon, only two of us received this. And it's really for being one of the top 30% health centers in the country. So I'm really excited about that, because that takes into consideration all of the metrics that we have met and that are significant improvements and the high quality care that we provide. So this is really exciting. When I received that, I was kind of dancing around a bit, because it really recognizes just how what I've always known, that we really provide high quality care in our health center.
So I have a couple of questions. Number one, just to clarify, the federally qualified health centers, there are two locations in Lincoln County, one in the north end of Lincoln City and one, well, I guess generally it's a 1010 building, and then the Nye Street behavioral health area.
Mm-hmm.
So clarify in my mind, the county, thanks to your good mm-hmm. work, received the grant. Is the grant independent of the Quality Leader Award?
Yes.
So these are two separate accomplishments.
Yes. We receive an award. We have a designation as a federally qualified health center, and we've had that since July of 2006. And we received that in this county because there's two reasons you receive a designation as a health center. One of them is that you have a high need of folks who wouldn't be able to receive the services otherwise. And the other reason we have received that is because we're a rural county. It's really hard to get providers here. And there's a national shortage of providers anyway. And so in Lincoln County, we struggle to have enough providers to meet the needs. And that's not just in terms of primary care. That's also in terms of mental health. And so we have a designation as a federally qualified health center that allows us to serve a larger group of folks.
Very good. Congratulations again.
Thanks.
It's neat.
So the other news we want to bring to you today is sort of late breaking. On Monday, we found out that after 5 years of laboring towards this goal, we actually became nationally accredited, our health department did. So this is a public health award that we've been working on for a long time to make these national standards. And we had our site visit
in May. It was the 17th and 18th of May.
So they actually had peers from around the country come and look at all of our stuff. I think you both met with
had a pleasant conversation with
people.
Them, yes.
Yeah. And so this is the result of that site visit and a lot of documents that we've been sending into them for the last several months.
So could you take a second and explain what it means to the public? Because you get an honor is one thing, but most people ask one question, what's it mean to me?
Right. Well, I think for both of our awards, what it means is that we're doing some very quality work in healthcare for our residents here. So for Rebecca's, as she explained, it's all based on quality improvement and meeting some metrics that they have put forward that they want us to meet. And for us, it's more about making sure that we are doing what we're supposed to do, that we're reaching out to our community and getting their input on how we should be running our health department.
Mm-hmm. I'd say it can make us more competitive for funding, too, in the long run of things. It kind of holds us to that national standard, saying that we're, it's the same accreditation standards for Multnomah County as it is for Lincoln County. It took us about 700 to 800 documents to show that we have the same standard of public health services as some of the larger counties. Why it's a really big deal for rural counties is there's about 3,000 counties in the United States, give or take. Only about 215 are currently accredited. Of those, there's only 27 others that are rural counties.
So, like I said, the question is how does that then? One of the things we struggle with mostly in Lincoln County is how do we get a doctor? Does being accredited means your standards so that you will get a better applicant or a different applicant as a doctor to this position?
Well, public health doesn't really hire doctors. Ours is mostly nursing and public health professionals doing the work. So the doctors are more in the clinic.
In the health center.
So it doesn't
in the
health center. That position.
The award that we received is a reflection of the work that our physicians and our nurse practitioners and our nurses and all of our staff do.
Okay.
Ours is more centered around like our environmental health, our communicable diseases program, our health promotion team. Those were kind of, and our emergency preparedness. Those were kind of the core programs that they looked at for us.
So Nicole is right, though, that this will set us up into a better position. So especially in the state now, they're asking, there's a form that we have to fill out now for when we do our reporting on the money we spent and the money, the gaps that still exist. It's part of the modernization project, that if we got accredited or not. And so they're, so that's great news. I mean, it's like, oh, we can check the box. We're so excited.
Well, I guess that's just wrong in so many ways.
Well, I think.
Or right in so many ways. That's the way
well,
the government
works. Well, it's
exciting.
It's a huge accomplishment. And, you know, it's not just checking the box, but now we are accredited.
Well, what it means after you check the box.
What it means after we check the
and
box.
And all of the work that goes into it when you can actually say, yes, we do that.
Well, I think both these awards are significant for really three things. First of all, I think it gives the citizens, should give them additional confidence that the services that we're delivering are quality, that they're of a high quality and they're focused at trying to address illness and improve the wellness, and so they're getting better care. I think it has a potential, as Commissioner Thompson was alluding to attract good employees. I mean, the fact that we've got this recognition, this distinction, says we're doing some things right, and we worked hard to get our act together. And then finally, being able to check the box gets us more money. I like that. So I think congratulations to all of you. Congratulations to the staff. I know they've all worked hard, and it's really as a commissioner, it's proud to sit here and recognize you for the accomplishments. So good work.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. All right. Next item on our agenda is adoption of the consent calendar. These are items of a routine nature, or items that have come before the board before. Is there any item staff or commissioners wish to highlight?
Commissioners, excuse me, but we need to do a little bit more work on item H1. Can you please pull
I'm sorry,
that?
The door.
Which one? Item H1.
H1.
Please pull that from the consent.
We're going to remove H1. All right.
Yeah, make a motion to adopt the consent calendar exclusive of item H1.
I'll second it. All those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
That motion carries. Next item on our agenda. Our decision items. First is an order to approve the local agency agreement for the replacement of North Waukau Road, North Beaver Creek Bridge, number 12-19-6. Director Kenyon.
Good morning, Roy Kenyon, Lincoln County Public Works Director. August 15th, 2 weeks ago, I brought to you a proposed agreement between the State of Oregon and Lincoln County to fund this bridge project that you refer to. It's a project that we have, Lincoln County has agreed to take on ourselves, which then allows us to utilize the full federal funding. Typically, when the federal money comes to the state takes 6 cents on the dollar. And because we are going to deliver this project ourselves, we're retaining that 6 cents, so we're able to utilize the entire $929,000 for this $1 million project.
Where is this bridge located? If you go from the covered bridge, which I think most people are there at the end.
We're actually on North Beaver Creek
North
Road.
Beaver, excuse me. Not on,
so if you...
sorry, I was thinking.
Yeah, no. So if you started...
Too far south.
Started on a beach.
Yep.
And go up North Beaver Creek Road, you will actually reach the end of the paved road about 3 miles, 3.5 miles in. Another mile and a half up the rock section of North Beaver Creek Road, Wachau Road, is a junction that goes to the left and goes down into kind of some pasture land and crosses North Beaver Creek. And it's currently a one-lane wood structure that is quite aged. It's getting close to the point where we're going to have to post it for load rating. And before we get that far, we was blessed enough to get approval for this project.
So is this going to be another one like Trap Creek? Because I just went over the Trap Creek Bridge, and it's the next item on here, and I was amazed. I'd never been in Trap Creek because the old bridge, I was a little bit reluctant to... but they didn't even drive over the side.
Well... Yeah, the bridge that currently crosses North Beaver Creek on Wachau Road is about the quarter of the length of what Trap Creek Bridge was, but it's similar. If you drive fast, you're all right. Well, it's, you know, the thing is, we apply for these projects through the state transportation, you know, improvement project, and basically, they rate these bridges, and they will give, you know, they award these on basically merit or how bad your bridge is. Obviously, they felt this bridge was in poor enough condition that there it was accepted as a project. And so it's less than 60 feet long. And so the bridge that's going in is going to be much shorter, much smaller, a lot cheaper than the Trap Creek Bridge.
So can I ask another related question?
Go ahead.
Trap Creek Bridge is a metal bridge.
No, it's concrete.
It's concrete, but it's metal rails.
Metal rails.
On the edge of whatever.
Yes. Yep.
It's concrete below it then. So since this one is North Beaver, has it got any salt water around it?
It's not salt water there. It's not tidal there. No.
Okay, so that solves one of the problems.
Right.
Bridges I worry that are metal that aren't handled right deteriorate rapidly, and if there's any tidal action.
Right.
Okay.
Well, and actually this Wachau Bridge hasn't been designed yet. We're just now basically trying to finalize the actual funding to support the project, and so we're going to go out a request for proposals, hopefully, if this is approved, in the fall. Bring in the chosen engineering firm to design the bridge with, you know, our suggestions. And what we're suggesting is a 100% concrete structure.
So just to clarify, the bridge is safe. The bridge is not unsafe.
The bridge is currently safe.
Yes. Okay. I think that's...
I would drive across the bridge right now.
I think
now.
That's an important fact.
Yes, but my statement was it is getting to that point.
Right.
Where,
but it was unsafe, we would close it, or we would weight limit it. We would do other things to address
that. That is correct.
The bridge is safe.
Yes.
I guess one of my points is there's no sign that says it's a county bridge. I've seen some bridges on the Aquinnah that I wouldn't drive over, that people drove over, and they're private bridges.
Mm-hmm.
And since there's no sign that says this is a county bridge, how do you know which one? If you're just like Trap Creek, like I said, I never went over Trap Creek before. And yesterday I did because of because of the next resolution, I wanted to see what was there. And
right.
The in traffic. So, but the private bridges, you got to be careful. They don't reach a standard.
They do not. And I guess it's up to the public to be aware of where they're at, whether that it's a state highway, a county road, a city street, or somebody's driveway.
Or if they have questions, they could call the Public Works Department.
They could. We have no information on private bridges, but we could definitely tell them, you know, what jurisdiction controls.
Okay. Yeah. Then again, you indicated that the federal government's providing $929,000 of the total cost, which was how much?
Well, it was scoped at a little over $1 million.
So
the county's contribution is 10.27% of the total cost of the project. So on $1 million, we'd be into it for $102,000.
Yeah.
So
did we get to do matching in the 102?
That is our match.
Yeah.
So we match 10.27% of the total cost.
What I meant was not just matching this. If we do any survey work, we do anything in there, does that come off of that bill?
It's all one bill.
Okay.
So all the work that's done goes towards that project.
Yeah.
About a 9x return on our investment.
That's right.
Pretty good. All right.
We'll take that deal.
Yeah, anytime. All right, I'll entertain a motion to approve that.
Make a motion to approve the local agency agreement to replace North Wild Cow Road, North Beaver Creek, number 12196.
I'll second it. Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
That motion carries. Director Kenyon, you're still there. The next item on our agenda is a petition to vacate a portion of Trap Creek Road, number 522.
That's correct. Also, August 15th, I brought to you a petition to vacate a portion of Trap Creek Road. There was found to be a slight encroachment on the right-of-way and from a house that's currently under construction. The deal that was worked out was the abutter on the opposite side of the right-of-way agreed to deed right-of-way to the county for road purposes. Therefore, there would be, with the vacation, if approved, there would be no restriction in the current 60-foot width of the right-of-way. It would only be a realignment of the 60-foot right-of-way. And as a benefit to the public, with the realignment of this right-of-way, it actually matches up better with the approach onto the new Trap Creek Bridge.
Well, like I say, I went up and drove it, just happened to be in going over the new road and decided to go take a look at it. I assume the dirt that's piled there is the new route.
That would be the approximate position of the rerouting. Yeah, that was actually material that I allowed the contractor, when he was finishing up work on the Trap Creek Bridge, to put in there, knowing that if this goes through, that would be a little bit of base for what should be the new alignment.
So it's not very far, but it's nice that there's good neighbors there that are willing to give up a property line so that this can happen, because it might be difficult to move that house the way it sits there.
That is correct.
The other thing that I did when I decided to drive Cracker to see what it was, because of all the roads in Lincoln County I've been on, I've never been on it before because of the bridge. So with that new bridge in there, I think there'll be more people that might drive across there to look. There won't be a lot. There's only like 3 or 4 homes in there. But when I got to the end of Trap Creek Road, there was no place to turn around when you enter on private. It says private property, don't enter, and you have to back out. It seems like it would make sense to possibly gate that back up by where the people's driveway is, rather than to drive into that gulch. It wasn't a problem for me, but I can see someone that's not used to backing up, could be difficult to make all the turns to back out of there.
Right, and you're correct. And up until just a couple months ago, that route out the back was still being used because of bridge construction. And that route, actually, we had an agreement with Hancock Forest Management to actually put in a temporary detour across their property so the residents of Trap Creek could exit out onto the new alignment while the bridge was being constructed. And like I said, we just recently finished that portion up. The detour was actually blocked where it intersected the new alignment of Highway 20. But we really, I agree, we really need to come back further on to probably the county road right away and put in some kind of a turnaround. And I don't know if we were to put up a gate, we would have to make sure that we issued keys, one to Hancock and two to probably Oregon Department of Forestry and three to maybe the Sheriff's Department. I mean, gates have their own issues, but we will make sure that we do something there to make it a little easier for those who don't know where they're at to get turned around.
Can I assume we'd work with the property owner right there to build whatever we build would be with their, so we can work collaboratively with the property owner?
Yeah, we'll make sure that that adjacent property owner is well aware and in favor of whatever we do.
Rather than maybe a gate, at least some kind of notification that there's no turnaround beyond this point.
Right, understood.
Private property, that kind of thing.
Right.
Could also be a solution. So. All right.
Commissioners, can I note three things in the order that we prepared for you just to make sure?
Please do so.
Number one is, given the unique circumstances which have been described here, this is unusual to be doing this.
This is
an encroachment.
One of a kind.
It is a one of a kind, so the order actually reflects that. This is not setting any kind of precedence. By doing this, that actually the public interest is benefited because the new alignment actually gives a better approach to the Trout Creek Bridge than was there before, and that's been noted in the information provided by the director. Second thing is that this is conditioned on two different actions that have to take place here. One is that we prepared a right-of-way deed to get the new alignment in place. All the costs associated with preparing the legal descriptions and doing that have been borne by the applicants. And we're going to require that actually be executed. We're going to take care of that and record it first before this order is recorded, in order for that to occur first. And the second thing is that the petitioners or their agents are going to have to fully construct the new alignment in there, and that's required inside of this particular order too. And they'll have 30 days from the date of the vacation in which to complete that. And Roy's been talking to them about how that can get accomplished.
Other thing, as you noted last time, Commissioner Thompson, potentially the property value will increase of the house, and that generates some additional revenue for the county. So it's a win-win situation. I'll entertain a motion.
Okay. I make a motion to petition to vacate the portion of Trout Creek Road by 22.
Okay, I'll second that approval. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
That motion carries. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Next item on our agenda is a discussion of substantial amendment to number 13 South Beach Urban Renewal Plan. This is the City of Newport, and I believe we have two representatives coming forward. Welcome. For the record, please introduce yourselves.
I'm Spencer Nebel, City Manager, City of Newport.
Derek Tokos, Newport Community Development Director.
What's on your mind today?
Well, we have, we're before you to present and consult with you on a major amendment to the Newport South Beach Urban Renewal Plan. The plan is set to expire in 2027. Significant issue that's being addressed in this amendment would allow projects to start up till 2025. The current plan would require projects start by 2020, and that would eliminate several potential projects from the third phase of the project plan. So the amendment would just allow those projects to start later in that calendar. The plan still expires in 2027. Derek can add some additional detail.
Yeah, there are a couple reasons for this. As you may recall, the last substantial amendment was done in 2009. It took a couple years for that to be developed. It created these three phases that are set out here. A lot of work has been completed, and the phase one and work's substantially done. Phase two as well. you know, this is infrastructure heavy, and I don't think at the time they really fully understood, you know, with the desire to leverage other funds, federal funds, state funds, other local funds, private funds, to take projects that are in concept in an urban renewal plan, work with the community to refine those into something tangible, then to secure the funding partnerships, then to do the design, then to, you know, to do the construction. It takes time. And to boot, we summarily went into a recession. So some projects, such as the signalization of 40th and 101, have had to be delayed because we just haven't had the vehicle trips that would trigger the signal warrants that ODOT would require of us to be able to signalize that intersection.
So the traffic wasn't heavy enough?
Yes. Yeah, the state requires a certain level of traffic at 40th and 101 before they'll allow us to signalize it.
Right. Yeah, 101.
Not on 101. 40th.
101 is golden.
No, it's all about 40th.
Okay.
Now,
for some reason, I was focusing on 101.
That particular project is one which, if we don't do the change in dates, it's unlikely we'd be able to initiate it by 2020. Although we do expect that there will be those vehicle trips on 40th shortly thereafter. We've got student housing for the Marine Studies Initiative that's going to be constructed. That project's been delayed a little bit, but it's still in the plans to move forward. We have additional phases in Wilder, and we do expect that some of the commercial and industrial properties, either the old Central Lincoln PUD site or the GVR site, which is about 14 acres on the other side of the street, could very well develop in that time frame as well. And that would then give us the kind of vehicle trips on 40th that we could actually get the state to agree to allow us to signalize at that location. Other projects for phase three, redundant underbay waterline has been called for as part of this phase three. That was part of the original plan. We still want to do that. There's a chance that we can secure some federal money to match up with that. The value of that is that, you know, our water supply is always at risk if the existing single water line that goes underneath the bay is damaged. We did have it damaged a few years ago, as I recall. And that put us in a terrible bind in terms of being able to get water to various users in South Beach. And so that's another key project, as is the extension of sewer south. Our view on that, we've done some additional refinement planning work on that. Originally, that was intended to provide sewer service strictly to the airport. But to get the kind of effluent volume we really need, we need to position that so that it can serve areas such as Surfland and some of those other unincorporated properties in the future. And so that might be a tough one to get done, but we certainly wouldn't be able to get that done by 2020.
Commissioner Thompson.
So, in the case of these under the bay water mm-hmm. lines and sewer lines, we have one, and I'm not familiar with the size, but I think it's like 20-inch or 20, how big is it?
It's large. I don't remember specific diameter.
Maybe a 20 inch.
If we put a new one underneath there, are we going to do one that's bigger so that we can get...
I believe it's a comparable size. I don't remember the diameter offhand. It would cross at McLean Point next to where the Hall family is going to be doing that industrial development. In fact, right now, they've got a couple of warehouse buildings that they have under plan review, and they'll be extending public water into their industrial site, and they're working with the port still on rearranging some lease agreements they have with them. And so we have been working with them, and the way they extend public water into their property will be set up for us to then branch off of that with an underbay crossing from McLean Point to cut over somewhere between, you know, the edge of the city limits and Idaho Point. I don't recall exactly where it would land.
Are you going to go under the mud flat?
Yeah, it'd be directional board underneath.
A long mud flat across there.
Mm-hmm.
I think the key is redundancy in the water main. That's what we've got enough capacity with the 20 inch for future needs. But if that fails, we've got no way to get water from the city system to South Beach.
If I remember right from a tour that I went with Derek one time, they talked about using Seal Rock water to pump back the other way if they have to.
Yeah, we do have a connection now with Seal Rock. So on a short-term basis, we can get water from Seal Rock to South Beach. So there's more redundancy today than there was prior to that intertie being completed about two or three years
ago.
Yeah,
but it still has its limitations. South, you know, the district only has so much capacity. One thing for the record, Wayne, I would note, because I caught it and Spencer and I were talking, under the phase three in the document, there's a project for intersection improvements at 50th and 101, and it's blank. That was to be listed as not funded. There were some project concepts in this urban renewal plan that are just beyond what you can reasonably expect to accomplish within the life of the district. That would be one of it. We were not going to have development to warrant any that's intersection work. Yeah, that's on page, well, 9 of my document, but...
Okay.
Yeah, it's the 50th.
50th. It's a blank up there. That'll be noted as just not funded. That project just wasn't ripe within the life of the district, if you want to think of that way.
I'm asking a related question.
Yeah.
If you're going to increase 40th Street and there's that much growth, you're going to have more bridge traffic. And if you haven't noticed, this summer, it's even worse. Eventually, that bridge becomes the choke point to the city of Newport, because if that sucker gridlocks the whole town, east, west, and north, south. Is there any movement on ODOT, any time frame of when they might take on that project?
Yeah, Derek can explain what we're doing with transportation.
Sure.
Transportation plan.
The short answer is no. That's on their big project list, given the price tag associated with it. And as you're probably aware, I mean, that choke point is, you know, part of the reason why, you know, we're doing a number of these improvements is an agreement with ODOT that we'll do everything we can short of replacing the bridge to improve traffic flow in South Beach. That's why we're moving a signal from 32nd to 35th, and the signal at 40th, and some of these other improvements all relate to that and kind of help facilitate the you know, Marine Studies Initiative development and other development happen in South Beach. Now, we're about to embark on a transportation system planning process on the north side, and part of that includes at least an alternatives analysis on the replacement bridge, so that we at least have some certainty that, okay, if and when it needs to be replaced, where will it go? Our expectation is that it would go adjacent to the existing bridge in that existing alignment, but we need to get that pinned down, because this transportation system planning work we're doing is part of the north side district that was recently formed back in 2015. And, you know, that planning work's going to spell out how we want to tackle the transportation network north side of town over the coming decades. And we need to know for certain where that bridge is going to land if those types of investments are going to be made. So we'll get some certainty as to where that bridge will go, but we're not going to get anything from ODOT as to exactly when they would be replacing it.
But in fairness to ODOT, this has been an item of discussion. I know I met with ODOT 2 years ago or 3 years ago, and at least it's an item of discussion. I think this is a good next step to try to determine where the crossing would be. And I used crossing intentionally because, in theory, you could go under the water instead of over the water. It's a long, complicated process, and it's going to be very expensive, and that's part of the challenge as to how are we going to pay for it. But it is something that ODOT is aware of, and the city is continuing to move forward, so that's good news. So I have some questions about back to the urban renewal. I know the county, first of all, to me, urban renewal is kind of a double-edged sword. It enables redevelopment of property, which in the long run, and I'll emphasize long run, has the potential to generate additional tax revenues. But in the short run, it caps the revenue. And as I understand it, Newport, City of Newport, has three urban renewal districts presently in effect.
Yeah, so we've got the South Beach Urban Renewal District that runs through 2027. We have the McLean Point Urban Renewal District, which is a small area that was established to help get utilities out to that area, to help develop that area. And then the North Side Urban Renewal District is the much larger urban renewal district that covers from the a strip along 101 and US 20 from basically the bridge to Agate Beach, and there are a number of projects that are identified in that that plan. The McLean Point and the North Side plans were adopted, I think, 3 years ago now.
2015,
and so those are the most recent ones.
The projected fiscal impacts that were presented to the county at the time those districts were formed assumed a South Beach district would close on time, which is 2027.
So I guess that's the other sword or other edge. Certainly mm-hmm. the development of the properties is a positive, but at the same time, urban renewal districts cap the revenue that's available to the county to support services to our countywide citizens. So do you have a rough idea of the revenue that we've lost as a result of the urban renewal plans?
Commissioners, maybe I can answer that real quickly. There's actually a chart in your materials after page 15.
I looked for it, but I didn't see one that I was able to comprehend. It's my fault.
It's table V3, which is they're actually under urban renewal law. When a plan is developed or an amendment, substantial amendment is made, there has to be projected property tax revenues foregone by the taxing districts provided that information. So
is that each year it's not a cumulative?
There's not a cumulative. I did cumulate it because I was thinking that might be a question. And I know that most of the other plans actually have a cumulative part, but they don't. So and on the South Beach, and this is interesting because what was not calculated, I found this interesting, was mm-hmm. the impact on the Animal Services District. And I think that's because at the time the South Beach plan, of course, was put in place, there wasn't an Animal Services District. But I mm-hmm. think, as I understand the way it works, it still would cap and the increment would go mm-hmm. even on the south on that district, a new district's in place. So I have just the totals, and this is between 2009 and 10, so some of this is already property taxes that have been foregone, and this is for the County General Extension and Transportation Service District. Does not include animal services. From 2009-10 through the end of the time frame in here, it would be $8,319,175.
That's the for total. What time period?
That's the period from 2009-10 through the end. That's taking all those numbers that you see in that table and adding them up.
No, I don't.
And that's all right. Okay. If you look at table 3,
but
they started at 2009-10 and then right. run it through 26-27.
Yeah, I see that.
All right. And that's the county general is $7,919,214. Extension is $126,359. Transportation is $273,602 for a grand total for all those county services of $8,319,175.
Okay, well, at this point, I have lots of questions about the effect of the urban renewal plans and how they affect the revenues that are available to support the countywide services. I'm not sure what you're asking from us today, or is this just to share the potential of change in the future?
This is a consultation. Because the South Beach is different than the other districts in that it includes unincorporated property, for the substantial amendment to go into effect, the county will have to accept it by resolution. We're happy to answer questions. It's a legitimate concern about tax increment that's tied up. I think the issue here, though, is we're not asking to extend the life of the district, and that's typically when that question comes up from the affected taxing entities. This district will close in 2027. If we don't do the substantial amendment, then the urban renewal agency will have to decide how it wants to approach phase three projects. It may mean that some projects that we would otherwise go out and leverage other dollars, they may choose to just try to pay for it entirely out of urban renewal to expedite the process. I don't know what they would do offhand, but it doesn't, they could also elect to close a district early. That's an option they have available to them, but okay. But as it stands, the district's set to close in 2027, and we're not recommending that change.
Okay, and I'm just asking some questions here.
yeah.
Why is unincorporated area of the county included in the urban renewal district?
That's how the original plan was set up. The laws allow that. I would guess with South Beach, it was an anticipation that a number of those properties would be urbanized, okay. And that the infrastructure, which this is an infrastructure-heavy plan, would allow that to happen.
Well, I think, urban renewal districts require a partnership, cooperation between mm-hmm. a lot of different jurisdictions. And while I have some questions, I think those partnerships are important. I'll recognize the Newport City Council for their vote in support of urban renewal money for the county commons. I think that's a partnership that's important. Mm-hmm. And, I have some questions. I would like to understand better the tax revenue impact.
Sure.
But I think urban renewals districts, they have some benefits. benefit, but it does require some partnerships.
Well, it does require a sacrifice by all the taxing entities,
exactly,
including the city's general fund as well. So,
I'm sorry, what?
Including the city's general fund as well. So,
No, I understand
right,
that.
Yeah.
No, you're absolutely right. All the taxing districts that are part of the urban renewal district are impacted.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, mind if I change a little bit?
It's, sure.
It's adjacent to this issue, but we were talking about water resiliency across the bay.
Yeah.
What bothers me about this is that both Seattle Water District and Newport draw out of the same river at almost the same location. And with global warming and the trends, if you'll notice this year, it's down again.
Correct.
We could be completely out of water from that location in the foreseeable future. So you're talking about resilience, but you're talking about resilience if the water supply stays the same. What do you have for long-term plans? I know you're working on a water partnership, but yeah, that thing moves like molasses.
Right.
No,
I thought you were going to say glacials.
I think anything that requires collaboration of many different entities and municipal water systems and environmental groups is not going to move quickly, you know, under the best of circumstances. I think the key with that whole process is recognizing the fact that water is a limited resource, and certainly as we're going through periods of warmer and drier summers, the impact on the Siletz River, which is our water source, is really evident.
Yeah.
When you look at the historic water levels on the Siletz, you know, we're running right even with what we experienced in 2015, and that's really on the record low level of the Siletz River for water. As these systems have expanded, whether it's Seal Rock or the city of Newport, there are opportunities to take a look at doing more interconnections similar to what we did between the city of Newport and Seal Rock District, which may open up as part of a kind of a comprehensive plan, an opportunity to really use our water resources in a different way in the long-term future as these systems potentially interconnect with each other. And I think in the long run, it may even call for a totally different model of how we deal with municipal water, you know, in Lincoln County. Again, that's it's a long-term issue, but I think the partnership is an important process that we've invested heavily in as a city to try to get this thing going, to try to deal with these matters on a regional basis instead of Newport dealing with Newport's issue, Toledo dealing with Toledo's issue, Seal Rock dealing with Seal Rock's issue. And so I think, unfortunately, some patience is going to be required with that process. Mm-hmm. I think that is the type of process that could really bring about meaningful change about how we deal with these resources that are definitely limited and need to be utilized best, both from a domestic, industrial, and environmental standpoint, for the protection of the water bodies that we're drawing from. So a lot of work to do in that area, and there's a good conversation going forward. I'm hoping that the resources are there to help that conversation come to some sort of conclusion. So,
yeah.
Very difficult.
Well, I think the message is we all need to work together.
Yeah, we've got to work on this one, yeah, for all of our benefits.
It's going to require a lot of time and effort and energy, but it's critical. So, all right, anything else?
Yeah, I guess I'm just in closing. From our perspective, before this is brought back to you for potential adoption via resolution, if there's any additional information you need from us or questions you have, if you could have them, get them directed to us.
But yeah, we would be glad to happy to respond in a written way to any specific questions that
absolutely
you have.
And commissioners, I think process-wise, this has already gone through the Planning Commission at the city. And you have a recommendation, and I think it's before the City Council. You actually
have a public hearing on Tuesday.
Yeah, so it's coming up. And assuming that this is adopted by the City Council, it'll be effective sometime in September then. Although the ordinance and the change does not become effective, it's the later date of either you adopting a resolution or the date the ordinance is effective, which means you've got a little bit of time to look at this, but we want to also be cognizant of the time frames that the city has to. So.
Understood.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate the information. Agenda. All right. Next item on the agenda would be reports. Commissioners? Commissioner Thompson? Anything?
Well, the Economic Summit was this last week.
Yep.
I think it's a new all-time record, Lincoln County community in. I hear the official number isn't in, you know, somewhere between 650 and 700, which is almost 100 over this. Nearest it's been. I saw a lot of people I've never seen at economic summits before. So it keeps Arnie Roland's project keeps building credibility, and I thought they did a good job of holding the venue and the meetings. I didn't go to the last day, but Wayne went on the last day.
I was there.
I was there for the natural resource part of it, which was basically on the first day.
First day.
And education and one planning issue was on the last day, but. I think it was a success. It was well worth the time spent to understand the issues that are going on and how they relate. A lot of them dealt with Salem, but in order to get anywhere in this business, you've got to work with Salem. And I think there was a lot of the biggest accomplishments were, like any conference, accomplished in the hallway and coming to agreement with people that were there. Also, I'll let Wayne do a description of our biosolids at this point.
Sure. And actually, before we do that, let me talk a little bit about the last day of the Coastal Caucus Summit, because Director Husing and I did attend a very important meeting that was convened as part of this particular conference on some changes that are being done on the building codes. The process of undertaking and completing inspections, and that's something that has ramifications not just in Lincoln County but across the entire state, and some actions that particular state agency undertook caused a lot of consternation across the state, and so this particular portion of the conference was convened and moderated by Senator Betsy Johnson, and I guess we could call Senator Johnson a force of nature in the way she handled this thing. It was pretty amazing to sit there and observe and participate in this process in terms of identifying what the issue was, really calling to task the state agency for things that had been done probably not in the correct procedural manner, at least, and then setting the table for hopefully some resolution of this particular matter. Unfortunately, there are a lot of legal issues that kind of float around this thing, but the Lincoln County will participate with its sister counties and with the League of Oregon Cities in making sure that our voices are heard in this particular matter and that this comes to some kind of resolution in the future. So that was an interesting part. The Biosolids Summit, I first of all would like to thank all the presenters who came and gave their time at this particular summit, which was held the Tuesday before the Coastal Caucus Summit. And we had, I didn't get an actual head count of how many people were there, but I think it was very close to 100 people or more that attended this particular presentation. I'd like to thank all the presenters especially, and Savar Celeste River gave a great presentation at the front end of the program that really kind of set the tone for what it is, the issues that we were trying to look at and where we were going with it, and then followed up with information and really having both the legislative and other elected officials listening to this and hearing what's going on here, hearing the concerns that are being expressed and what's going on, I think was very valuable. As we indicated, and unfortunately given the time frame we had, only a couple of hours to do this, this was the first step. This was not intended to be the be-all, end-all of everything, but really got us started on what we need to do as some of the next steps. I apologize, I had to, because of the time frame, I didn't have much time to really talk about some proposed next steps, except at the very end of the program, but we do have some things, both short-term and long-term ideas on what to go forward, and we want to hear more. I think based on the information we received there, I think we have maybe some more things we can look at. I do want to say that post that time, I've had some conversations with some of the folks especially the local folks, around the things that we wanted to do to say, can we take some steps on a voluntary basis without having to change the law and wait for the laws to change, which is something we obviously want to look into, but can we do some things right now? And I was receiving some pretty positive feedback from folks in terms of saying these are steps we might look into. I also had a quick conversation with the folks at DEQ. They obviously, their ears perked up a lot. I'm glad they brought more than just simply the local representative there. In terms of this particular issue, what they need to do to address it, both in terms of the substantive part, the rules and regulations, what they're actually doing there, but also in their procedures and how they deal with stuff. So we started a conversation there, and we've got some ideas there.
I looked at your list, and we both sat down and looked at your list together, and I think it's a good list, but there's things that could be combined. It's important that that's as short a list as possible,
sure.
And it tells you how to do it. You can have a list of things, but unless you know the political system, it's a lot easier to say where it goes, not just that this is something you want to have happen.
Right, and this is, again, this is an outline of something, and they'll have
I think we got a lot of
fresh out. Where's there still progress to do?
Yeah.
I will say this: the one thing I thought that was really good, and we were hearing kind of across the board, is that while this issue was around biosolids, and that was the primary focus in terms of this particular meeting, the concept of what we're doing in the Siletz watershed and in the basin in there, and this includes not just the river itself, but groundwater, and the idea of looking at water conditions, the symptoms of what's going on out in the river, what is happening out there, water quality and water health of that basin. I think there would seem to be a pretty universal understanding that that's got to be where we pivot and go with this thing. And I was getting a lot of support on the idea of doing the additional comprehensive, much more than what is being done out there, kind of testing to figure out what is going on here and what other things we need to be exploring to look at the health of the watershed out there. And it seemed to me that there was a lot of understanding around that in the room, at least, that is an important kind of takeaway. And it may be a little bit longer term kind of project to do that kind of thing, but that's, I think, very important. So biosolids is something we're addressing right now immediately, but it's the front end, not the back end of the whole thing that needs to be addressed. So.
Yeah, I agree. It's gonna be a big challenge, but I was excited to see the agencies scramble to their meetings together and start talking. You know you're getting an impact when
they showed up and they're listening.
Yeah, they showed up, they're listening, they're doing what they're supposed to do. And
now we got
my general feeling is that they actually are encouraged by this. They want to do a lot of these things that we're going to ask them to do. So that makes a big difference. We're not pushing the ball up the hill on them so much as we may be able to make this into a collaborative effort with the agencies in support. Any reaction to that, Wayne?
Well, I think that in some ways, yes. In terms of, especially around a key takeaway from this thing was, you know, are the existing rules and regulations, forget about whether they're the right rules and regulations for the moment, but are the existing rules and regulations being followed and being enforced? I mean, that was a key takeaway there. And I think that was very eye-opening for some of the folks there. I know that I came back and I talked about Kayleen and Alan's video of the most recent application. I think it's the Weiss-Carver property, where they did that there. And when I described that and they were going to go look at that, they were like, really? You know, really?
And that's, it still sits there on top of down hay that's molding.
Yeah, see, and that's that. Putting the stuff on top of down, they were going, and what they had informed me, I haven't followed up yet, haven't had a chance to follow up, but they informed me they were going to go and view that site. Either on their way out of there or do an inspection on the way out, but I got to find out what's happened with that. But you know, that's a little one again in the bigger scheme of things. But you know that especially around compliance with the existing regulations and enforcement, that was very eye-opening to them.
So, just a reaction to this. I hope this doesn't get into a molasses situation, because if we don't move fast, we actually have a chance to get this injected into the budget year legislature because there isn't much time, because that budget goes, it's already in the process, but the agencies can get it in there if we move fast on, well, not every item there, but some of those we need to identify that need to be moved rapidly and get
them. Well, and especially I think they actually mentioned, I mean, I learned some things like OHA has some potential money available for testing. So rather than let us design a testing protocol here, let the local community design what we want to do, and then give us the money to do it. You know, participate. We're obviously going to have to participate financially, but they need to do that too. So especially accessing those kinds of things that move forward this whole idea.
And my other reaction is, if we're going to do any legislation out of this, that bill, it's a lot easier to get a bill if we put it in before the bill drop deadline in order to get it to move in this session, because if we wait till afterwards,
I agree.
Not that you can't do it, but it makes it much more challenging.
And we've got a couple of concepts that we're ready to do. And again, I hate to say that we're nibbling at the edges. We're not nibbling at the edges, but some of the things, such as addressing the question of local control, that we've got a couple of things that really don't take major changes in state law that we can propose, and we can get a bill in the hopper and go.
Okay. Well, short-term things to me, as you already indicated, is local control. Be nice if there was some more money in the budget for testing and enforcement. And what, generally speaking, the drop dead for bills is February, March, but we'd want to be active by the end of the year, I think.
You need to get in. Amity, you remember the drop dead date of last session?
It's always surprising. Do you want me to come up? Or?
No, you just tell me.
It's always far earlier than we always have to remind ourselves.
Right.
Get
like November 1. Or
it's a short window of time. Yeah. So pre-session filings, absolutely. If you know what you're going to do, you know, work it up this fall and let's find a sponsor and get it in the hopper so we're not struggling with priority bills and things.
So,
okay. And we'll be cognizant.
We've got our work.
We'll find that deadline date and we'll work toward that.
Okay, I'll report
on this fall. We need to be moving this fall.
I'll report on a couple of things. As Commissioner Thompson already indicated, the Coastal Caucus, I think, was even more of a success than we might have expected. I think this is the 7th annual one. And in addition to the general topics of the day, as Commissioner Thompson indicated, I had an opportunity to talk with people in the hallways, if you will, about biosolids, certainly. Talked about solid waste and the cleanup, potentially, of the former King Salvage site on Highway 20. Had an opportunity to have an extensive conversation with Senator Johnson about funding of some of the nonprofit agencies that the state supports. Had a conversation about some of the regional solution issues, rain, and other efforts to create some jobs. But the good news, at least I think as far as jobs and future activities, is the Governor's Maritime Task Force will be having its first meeting on September 5th. So we're finally having our first meeting of legislation that was approved last, July? June?
June, and actually the thing started almost 2 years
ago.
How long it takes to get something done.
So anyhow, finally we have a task force. All right, that would conclude commissioner reports. We'll move on to constituent input. I think we have some people in the audience. And
I would love to just go.
As always, ask you to identify yourselves. Please limit your comments to no more than 5 minutes. Commissioners may or may not respond. Welcome.
Hello, I'm Cynthia George, and I'm coming up on some pretty heavy anniversaries, so I've been very, very emotional. So next week will be a year exactly that you guys closed me down. And I'm coming up on the anniversary of the last days I spent with my daughter. So I've been getting having a hard time dealing with people. But I first want to start out and thank all the ceremonies that are going on all across this country for the water. And I was asked to participate recently, and I can't, because I don't see goodness right now in people. I don't see beauty. I see destruction everywhere. And so all I do is shed tears. GP permit is coming up for renewal. And you just came out with a bacteria count again. Nye Beach, all of them are off the charts again. And I've brought this up a million times and nobody wants to listen. So I brought the study and I'm going to give it to them. But we've got a bacteria that's being pumped out into the ocean. And as you know, that mill, when it pumps that stuff out, it floats on the top of the water. The effluent is lighter than seawater, so it forms a blob. They've also got problems with their pipes being submerged under the sand, so it's not actually able to flow out. So they're pumping this bacteria into the ocean. And it says right here, fecal coliform, okay? However, there is a group of bacteria called Klebsiella, which I've got the study on, that is commonly found in pulp and paper effluent associated with wood fibers that can give a false positive reading for fecal coliform. Okay? Fecal coliform was not detected in the second sample, so they did tests. They found this Klebsiella in this, which they know is there. Okay? And they found fecal coliform also, but they say the second sample with the Klebsiella was measured, and they say that they think that the fecal coliform is testing positive because it's actually this Klebsiella that is indicating fecal, because that's what it does. But it's not. But it's dangerous, and it also becomes antibiotic resistant. It can cause sepsis. It can cause colitis. It's an enterobacteria. We're pumping it out here, 11 million gallons a day, okay? So we need to truly start testing. And GP is required to do monitoring and testing, but we never see it. And they're on expired permits. They're supposed to be holding, and they want to start up with this Juno. So I talked to the guy at GP. This Juno technology, when they take all of those toxins off of that, those paper products that they want to process through there, that also is going to be dumped right out into the ocean. So they're not only going to be dumping what they're already dumping, but they're going to add to it. So the public needs to know we may have some serious bacterial problems caused by GP. And there's also, it's funny because it talks about the Newport pipes, discharge outfalls, that there's concerns that they may actually overlap, and we've got now the measurements. So you guys need to have that study. Okay, so Fred Van Eck Restoration. Fred Van Eck. Anybody know who Fred Van Eck is? Owns half of the Yuquina River forest lands, okay? Halfway down the Yuquina River between Newport and Toledo, South Bay Road, they're getting ready to log, clear cut that whole area. Well, they got a wetlands restoration project that they're planning on. And they want to go in and spray poisons, glyphosate, Roundup, all through the wetlands, coming within 10 feet of the river. It's like, really? So I call, I'm looking for Fred. Where's Fred? I want to talk to Fred. Fred is a mutual fund in Missouri. So that's how our lands are being protected. Okay, so I go to Lincoln County Soil and Water to find out what they're doing to protect the river. They said, oh, that's standard practice. We're doing it. I went, what? You're out spreading Roundup in your restoration projects too? You've become part of the problem? Maybe that's, you know. So I go to OSU, okay, because our marine, OSU. Oyster beds right down below. Are we concerned about the oyster beds? We already know they've made people sick from bacteria levels here a few years ago. The lady, Ms. Jacobson, it's not her job, even though that's her fisheries. Now you're saying you're going to have a marines? Well, what are you going to do to make sure all this isn't affecting the fish, the seafood? the oysters. Because in the GP thing, it says right in here, the only thing they were concerned with was the soft-shell crabs in the bay, that there was no real value to anything that lived in the river. Nobody mentioned the oyster beds. How crazy. Okay.
Time's up, Cindy.
Hang on.
Time's up, Cindy. I ask you to respect the others. That
okay, well, I got a question. I understand that.
Well.
And I'll be back next week to finish
you're
my...
You're welcome to come
did
back.
You ever find out if GP is going to be able to draw off the river once it's drawn down?
No.
Olala? No, of okay. course not.
Thank you, Cindy. Others who wish to comment, again, I ask you to limit your comments to 5 minutes.
And that's why I won't put a lot to
you. Alan Davis, Logs in Oregon.
Welcome back, Alan.
Welcome. Thank you. First of all, Terry and Doug, thank you. I have a problem with on our bio summit August 21st. You know, the DEQ anytime could have told us what was in the water and shut us down, told us the water is safe, no worries. They had over a month to do this, but they gave us no analytical or no laboratory reports at all. So I'm really concerned about the water, whether it's still good or not. They gave us absolutely no information whatsoever. So that really concerns me there. To save our Slits River. If they would have told us that water was safe, we would have quit. We went swimming. We swam there for 30 years. This is our 31st year. We will not swim it because we do not know it's safe, and they did not verify it, whether it's safe or not to drink or swim it. Second of all, the city Siletz is pumping 60,000 gallons effluent a day into the river. I talked to Al Madaw, and it's confirmed. This is toxic. It turns out to 21,900,000 gallons a year. They overflow in a winter sewage. That's been proven on the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System evaluation. That was proven they do discharge overflow. The U.S. Geological Survey and National Park Service cooperated in a study and determined the currents of wastewater and influence to see if fragrances, fire retardants, and pharmaceuticals, to see if those in the river. The organic wastewater contaminants in farmer schools were detected in water and bed sediment samples collected. The presence of the compounds in the bed sediment indicates the potential to accumulate in sediments, resulting in long-term storage and potential redistribution into aquatic life. I mean, it's just stacking up on that sediment. And so that's a problem. Third of all, the municipals are violating part electric code of federal regulations. It is the part 503.14. I'll read this. It is standards for the use or disposal of sewage sludge. A, bulk sewage sludge shall not be applied to the land if it is likely to adversely affect a threatened or endangered species listed under the sections of 4 of the Endangered Species Act, or a designated critical habitat, cohorts both. So the municipals and everybody is violating the law, and DEQ in the state. I have contacted the EPA, filed a report to them, also contacted U.S. Wildlife Law Enforcement, Eric Merrick, and also filed another possible violation against the municipals. And there's one solution to these biosolids. No more biosolids used in Lincoln City, period. We want, in Lincoln County, excuse me, water samples, sediment samples, all to be tested. This is serious. And you know, when you're pumping out 60,000 gallons a day of effluent in the Slits, and we're in a drought condition, and it's going to puddle up in those holes below, and there's kids and stuff swimming in that water. Somebody needs to put some signs or something up that, you know, the water, Slits River's going down and down and down. We live next to it. We watch it. You know, and Slits is pumping 60,000 gallons of pasta, and there's toxic stuff in this stuff. You know, so I'm just warning, you know, people that, you know, we need to do something about it. And, you know, and they're all, like I said, Wayne, you can look it up for yourself. You know, 503.14, they're a total violation. they're violating, you know, federal laws.
Add it to our.
And they said they would contact within 10 days the EPA and also the U.S. Wildlife. They're doing an investigation on this. And if that don't work, we'll seek out environmental attorneys and force the municipalities to stop. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate the update. Kayleen, anyone else?
Kayleen Davis, farmer up there.
Again, I want to start out by thanking you guys. Doug, you started out great. Stop polluting the water all the way. Hey, those were great words. Terry, and thank you for your words at the end. Wayne, you pulled it together. But you used those words, monitoring, to me. And that is not okay. Because why you guys keep saying that? And they say open eyes. But in the meantime, now Howard is flipping that hay with those biosolids on it. I called the Environmental Health Monday, and I filed my concerns. I have autoimmune. I feel it going. I can feel my lungs going. That may have been the smoke. But my joints are going. My skin is going. It becomes debilitating. And I thought, you know, I was born with childhood dermatitis. It's a lifetime thing. It's an autoimmune. My girls have it. Started my morning out with a call from our daughter. 4-day migraine. You know, I don't know if it has anything to do with this, but this is a pilot project. When did this pilot project start? Because guess what? They did a pilot project in North Carolina, South Carolina, and Virginia. They went and they surveyed these people for their health problems. DQ, Mrs. Mark, you should have checked with us before. See where our health was before. Because see where it is now. And the neighbors, okay, well, I told you we have the one neighbor, they've got problems. Well, the Berkeys, they moved in next to the church, oh, I don't know how many years back.
About five.
Elderly couple, yeah, they were in their 70s. I visited with Carolyn along that fence lots of times. She was very coherent. She is a wonderful person. She's still with us as far as I know, but she got dementia while she lived there. One day we were watching Mr. Berkey out in his yard, and then all of a sudden he was disoriented. We started to head over, but then all of a sudden, he was just kind of walking in circles, not really focusing, and then he came to and he left. Well, later that week, he had a stroke. He's had his second. They no longer live there. They're still with us, but mentally, they're gone. So, I kind of lost my track there. In the meantime, Depot Bay was probably still coming. I hear DEQ went there. Did you read the News Times? I mean, I don't know if we've ever made anything on the Biosolid Summit, but DEQ and Depot Bay, that's in there, and they're saying DEQ says we follow all of our regulations. We know that's not true. They didn't even post the cities or where they're putting their municipalities' biosolids, toxic sewage sludge, or where they're putting it. That wasn't right. So Depot Bay, from what Betty says, we'll probably go ahead and go forward. We'll go ahead and send the petition, but I'm hoping I can get copies of the signature pages to send. Maybe another 600 signatures, people saying that it's not okay. Maybe that will help. In the meantime, I'd like to know what's going to happen with Howard Weisgeber's, because this is also a new pilot. We've never had toxic sewage sludge left to lay on hay. I don't know if he got a call or if he windrode it, because Roxanne said, a friend down at the Logsdon store said, what's the buzzards down your guys' way? It's like, oh, really? I didn't see him. Well, maybe that's why he's turning the hay, to get the buzzards away. I don't know. I didn't see it. But I did see him turning the hay. Where's the signage on these fields? The DEQ won't do it. Why don't, okay, county, let's step up. Put a sign out there. Let's mark these. I sent a note to one granddaughter, so don't come out this way. I don't know about the air. My 6-year-old granddaughter talked to her last night. She wanted to come visit us. I said, no, baby, we can't have you out here. I don't know if it's safe, and I don't. Do you? Can one of you tell me? Amy, Jeff, Ono, can you tell me? Can you tell me? Let's get a vote. Let's get this stopped. This is real.
Thank you. Thank you. Anyone else wish to address the Board of Commissioners? All right. Seeing none come forward, our next meeting of the Board of Commissioners will be on Wednesday, September 5th, right here at 9:30 a.m. in the Board of Commissioners, room 108. With that, we're adjourned.